Welcome to a special edition of WFSU's Perspectives, which normally happens on Thursdays unless we're in the political season, and we'll say more about that later. But what we need to talk about right now is the recovery from Hurricane Michael. We have been talking about that literally since Thursday, and also on Friday, and yesterday too, and we're back with you. I'm Tom Flanagan, along with the entire WFSU news team, and we are finding out how the recovery is going. We know pretty much how it's going in Tallahassee. We're in fairly good shape here. More on that to come. But right now, let's get a weather update from a gentleman who, along with his team, has been working literally nonstop since well before the landfall of Hurricane Michael. And that is Florida Public Radio Emergency Network meteorologist Jeff Huffman. Jeff, have you gotten any sleep at all in the past 72 hours or so?
Good afternoon, Tom. I think more than you, that's for sure. More than you. So this is a long road for all of us.
Phenomenal kudos to your team for keeping us so informed all during the height of the storm and its immediate aftermath. And I know that our news director, Lynn Hatter, has some questions for you. So let's pass it on over to Lynn, okay?
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for joining us today. I want to talk about this particular storm. We've seen a lot of the damage on our coastlines, but counties further inland like Jackson, Gadsden, Liberty, even Washington County, which is up there on that Florida-Georgia line, took major hits this storm. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah, good afternoon, Lynn. This was a storm that, of course, was a Category 4 at landfall, and typically the stronger storms have smaller wind fields, more compact wind fields, at least where those extreme winds are. And when you think about the geography of the coastline, if you were to pull out a map right now, even on our Florida Storms mobile app, you look at the Panama City Beach area and you look at Panama City. Many people think that Panama City Beach is due south of Panama City. That's not the case. The coastline curves there, and it's actually more west than south. And so the center of, or the eye of, Michael came ashore just to the east of Panama City's proper and over toward Tyndall Air Force Base. And of course, we all saw the pictures from Mexico Beach. So the Panama City Beach area, where a lot of people recognize as the tourist destination, the commercial district, that was just outside the eye wall. And actually, that was an offshore wind. So it actually ended up being a better situation there than, say, in downtown Panama City. And this holds true further up inland, because further up toward the I-10 corridor in Gadsden County, for example, that took more of the brunt of the eye wall. And it was much more intact there than, say, it was over toward Panama City Beach.
Is that the same thing that happened in places like Chipley and Mariana? Is that sort of the path of the eye wall going up? Is that why we see some of those, you know, cities way far up north sort of get hit really badly?
Yeah. So like when you move up north, say toward, I forgot the highway name, that's over, the number of highway that it goes up just through Lynn Haven and up toward Mariana. Yeah, okay. 98. That's 231 as well took the brunt of that. So we have 231 between basically Highway 75, 231, whichever you call it, and Blountstown. That's where the core of this hurricane went. And that's where the strong winds moved far inland. Remember, it was moving pretty quickly for a hurricane, and that's why it was able to hold together a little longer further inland.
Let's talk about we're hearing a lot of people, especially in some of these coastal communities, saying, I didn't know it was going to be this bad. If I knew it was going to be this bad, I would have evacuated. And some are saying, you know, the meteorologists didn't tell us. Talk a little bit about this, because this storm was relatively steady in its track.
It was, Lynn. The hurricane forecast track was quite on point from the National Hurricane Center. This is the second hurricane in a row. Florence was really good forecast track. But remember, the science in terms of the intensity at landfall in particular is lagging behind here. There's definitely been some great strides made on intensity forecast. But just like we saw Florence weaken fast right before landfall, somewhat unexpectedly, we sometimes forget that the other side of the spectrum can be the case, where a storm can intensify quickly right before landfall. And this one certainly had every opportunity to do so.
Because it started off, I think the projections were it would be a Cat 1, and then a few hours later it was a Cat 2, and then a day later it was a Cat 3. And by the time it finally made landfall, it was 2 miles per hour shy of being a Category 5?
Yeah, according to the actual estimates or data collected from the hurricane hunters, I think the highest wind speed we had from an official station was 129. But it's certainly possible that when the damage surveys are done a little later, we have some folks from the University of Florida and some folks from the National Hurricane Center that'll be out there, and I think some folks from FSU will be out there as well. All those who do this for a living will help us determine what the exact wind speed was. Remember, Andrew was a Category 4 at the time it came ashore. At least that was the projection of its strength, and then later assessed to be a Category 5 with 165 mile per hour winds.
Wow. Let me ask you one more question, Jeff, because we've heard some people suggesting that there were also tornadoes touching down. I talked to people out in Gadsden County, even the sheriff's office, who suggested they may have had several. Any verified reports of tornadoes, of this thing spawning tornadoes?
Nothing yet. I think damage surveys still have to be done. It wouldn't surprise me if we had some vortices inside the eye wall that could have been tornadic in strength. When you get to 115 to 145 mile an hour winds, that would have been about the strength of the tornado itself. So it gets a little difficult for the damage survey teams to figure out what was a tornado versus what was the straight line winds. They're going to have to look at a lot of aerial photography and do those surveys later. But I have no doubt that there were probably some vortices, some areas of stronger winds, even inside the eye wall. That's very common with very strong hurricanes.
Got it, Jeff. Thanks so much for taking the time out to join us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Lynn, and all the best to you and your team as you continue to help everyone through this.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Jeff. We really, really do appreciate that. Let's check in here. We have some time with Cody. He has an update on the power situation over in Cottage Grove. Thanks for hanging on the line, Cody, and welcome to Perspectives.
Oh, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Hey, we're doing well, sir. How about you?
Oh, hot and sweaty. It's been pretty nice recently, though, but the novelty of a cold shower is wearing off quickly.
So what's the situation over in Cottage Grove?
Well, we are a main thoroughfare between Old Bainbridge and Monroe, so we get to watch the almost army-like cavalcade of bucket trucks, going from one side to the other, and kind of passing us over. But, they put out a post on TalGov this morning saying that was normal. You're going to see people going back and forth. But all of us that reported the outage here, apparently it's new. We've been reporting it for the past 3 or 4 days, and TalGov lines are busy. I sat on hold myself for literally 2 hours this morning with no reply. And all the lines that were down here, I guess they assumed were cable. So the utility guy that just drove by was a little surprised when asked him to step out of his truck and confirmed that there were, in fact, power lines down. And 22 houses in this neighborhood, some of which are, on the elderly side, have not had power since Wednesday at 2:30.
Hey, Cody, this is Regan. I can really sympathize with you there. I also am hoping that my power might be coming on back on sometime soon. I've been seeing those trucks go back and forth by my house. Mm-hmm. The city, of course, is still reporting that they are on track to get that 90% back by the end of the day today. Hopefully, you will be in that 90%. You might have also seen, I know you've been, it sounds like, tracking the city's messaging. Sounds like they were saying that there is a little bit of confusion with reporting power outages. Mm-hmm. The Digitally app that a lot of people are using to report their outages says something like confirmed or like
completed when it was.
Yeah, completed. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is confusing to some people. They're thinking that means, I reported my outage. It says completed, like we fixed that. But completed really means like we've taken that into our system. We hear you have an outage.
We've heard your concern. Right.
Right.
It makes sense. But the surprise, literally 5 minutes before I called, the utility guys were driving by and had no record of our street having any sort of outage at all. So, as if the people outside, grilling with flashlights and things like that wasn't a sign enough that there was no power. But the sense of community is great. I think maybe what the biggest problem was is we all came out and cleared the roads the day after. So it looked a lot nicer than the situation actually was. We didn't touch any things that were on the power lines, but next time might kind of leave more out just so it maybe draws attention from the eye of whoever's discerning what needs to be fixed.
Yeah. See, that's it, Cody. You fooled them. So
yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, good luck. Let's hope you're not among that 10% still without power at the end of today. And thanks for the report out there from Cottage Grove. We also got an email from Virginia Newman. She lives in Killarney Estate. She says much of the area seems to have power, but not on Killarney Way. So that's another. Again, strange ways that all of this stuff interconnects, because we got power just late yesterday, and yet right behind the street behind us, there is no power because they took a major hit on the feeder line to their neighborhood.
Right. And so, the city is saying to people, hey, you know, your neighbor might be on a different circuit from you. And so some people are thinking, well, if my neighbor has power, why do I not have power? Did the city forget me? But again, I've been in contact with city officials, and they are saying, hey, just because your neighbor has power doesn't mean that you should. We're working to get everybody power as quickly as we can. But of course, different circuits will come back on at different times, and your neighbor could be on a different circuit
from you.
That's how
it goes. Want to do a roundtable here, Lynn?
Yeah, and we, you know, it's funny. We saw this same situation during Hurricane Hermine, when houses right next to each other, one house had power and another house was still dark. And, you know, the city is on a circuit, but even places right next door to one another can be on different circuits because they have to sort of distribute the load as best they can. Tom, I do have a couple of updates just to reiterate a couple of finer points on schools. A lot of people are wondering, am I going to be able to send my kid to school next week? The following school districts are closed. Schools and school districts are closed until further notice. Florida State University, Panama City's campus, Tallahassee Community College's Gadsden campus, the Florida Public Safety Institute, Gadsden County Schools, Bay County Schools, Jackson County Schools, and Liberty County Schools. These were also some of the hardest hit areas. So school district officials are basically telling families, we're trying to do damage assessments right now. Bear with us while we try and figure out basically what's habitable and what's not. Those are the school districts that will be closed until further notice. Everybody else is mostly set to go back to school sometime next week. Leon County Schools will obviously be opening Monday. And we're hoping to get some education officials on the line, Tom, because this is now, you know, the longer schools remain closed, we have to make up those days somewhere, and students will still have to take their state standardized tests. There's a lot of questions about when people will be able to go back home. So hopefully we will be getting some education officials on the line here to talk us more through what families with kids start to do next.
And what happens as far as that 180-day requirement, as you say, mm-hmm. Lynn, because will that require a special dispensation on the part of the legislature, or will these students in some of these outlying counties be going to school through the end of next July?
Well, that's a big question. Jackson County Schools is not slated to open anytime before November 1st. And I think they posted on their website, you know, keep watching that date. Bay County Schools is closed really until further notice, and so is Gadsden. I know Gadsden teachers are helping do damage assessments probably today with respect to their facilities. And I know we've seen Blountstown High School's gym is damaged. I saw a video of that on Twitter earlier today. So the damage that these schools took is pretty major. So it's probably going to be a while. So just keep checking. We will keep following up with the school districts as well on our end.
Heading towards a mandatory timeout here on our special edition of Perspectives in the wake of Hurricane Michael. And certainly we'd love to hear from you at 850-414-1234, our regular Perspectives line. You can send us an email to perspectives@wfsu.org, and we'll continue the discussion, which heading into this, by the way, no power in Waverly Hills, says an email communicator, but we do have crews working today. And in Crawfordville, Ted Hanna tells us, yes, there is power in colorful Crawfordville, but no Comcast or internet service as yet. We'll see if we can update that information too as we go forward right here on our special Perspectives. We'll be right back. Thank you. special post-storm perspectives on WFSU Public Media. Tom Flanagan and the whole news team here with us. And Regan McCarthy, I think you have a special guest that you had lined up to be part of this conversation before we began, right?
I do, yes. Nate Custer, he's the Public Information Officer for our area of the Federal Emergency Management Agency here. Nate, welcome. Are you on the line there?
I'm right here, Regan.
All right. Thanks, Nate. Thanks for giving us a call. Tell me, Nate, can you give us a quick update on just sort of what the boots on the ground situation is? Who do we have and where?
All right. Well, let me tell you that I'm a Public Information Officer with FEMA, so I can talk to you about some of those things. We have, moving throughout neighborhoods in the affected area, 12 what we call DSA teams. These are disaster survivor assistance teams. They are going about as best they can, door to door, going into the neighborhoods, reaching out to people, getting the message across that people who have damage, even if it's relatively minor, it's a good idea for them to register with FEMA for some possible federal assistance. With this registration, already more than 19,000 individuals and households have signed up for consideration on a case-by-case basis by FEMA. What the help can consist of is funding for some emergency home repairs and perhaps for temporary housing. We are not in the business of making you whole again to where you were before Hurricane Michael, but to try to help you get back on your feet. And even if you have insurance, with or without insurance, go ahead and register with FEMA. It costs nothing to do this, and here's how you do it. You call 800-621-3362, or you can go online at disasterassistance.gov.
Mm-hmm. Nate, can you tell me what counties those disaster survivor assistance teams are working in right now?
I can't vouch for them being absolutely every county all here this afternoon, but recently two more counties were added to the declaration. There are now 11 counties who've received a major disaster declaration for what we call individual assistance. That's to help the homeowners and renters, provide them with some emergency home repairs, with the hope being that the home can be fixed up, some of the home, let's say, enough for people to move back in. Maybe one room to serve as a bedroom, a kitchen with some basic cooking facilities, electricity, sewer, and water. It doesn't mean that all the damage is going to be fixed. And that's something that will be ongoing for the homeowners, but they could be in there while that is going on as much as possible. So it's designed to help people get back on their feet, but not enough to really make them to where they were
before
Michael struck.
And so you're saying that those teams should be moving throughout those counties that have been declared available to seek that individual assistance. Is that correct?
That's correct. 12 of what we call the DSA teams. They're all going to have picture IDs. Watch out for anyone knocking on your door claiming to be from FEMA and asking for a fee for possible help to FEMA, from FEMA. We don't charge anything for that. People need to know that those coming who are with FEMA will have a picture ID. I can also tell you, Regan, that we've had support from 16 other states, from emergency management agencies. More than 400 people are in Florida who have come from a wide area under the kind of mutual aid concept to help out here in Florida.
Mm-hmm. So if you're a person who's been severely impacted by this storm, you should expect to see one of these disaster survivor assistance teams probably knocking on your door soon. And if not, I understand FEMA will be setting up disaster recovery centers within the next few days here.
That's why that's something we're working on now. The disaster recovery centers will be where you can go in and talk to a FEMA person face-to-face, one-on-one, get all your questions answered, provide any documents that may be necessary for your application. And also the Small Business Administration, the SBA, is going to be there. They provide low-interest disaster recovery loans to eligible people, homeowners and renters. So even though business is part of that agency's name, in a disaster like this, they can provide some recovery loans to individuals.
All right, Nate Custer, FEMA Public Information Officer, thanks so much for joining us today. Anyone else here at the table with a quick question they might want to ask Nate?
Hey, Nate, this is Lynn Hatter. I have a quick question for you.
Sure.
I know that you said the federal funding is currently available for individuals in Bay, Calhoun, Franklin, Gadsden, Gulf, Holmes, Jackson, Liberty, Taylor, Wakulla, and Washington. But you guys are also making federal funding available to state and local governments as well?
That is what we call public assistance. It doesn't mean members of the public. It means state and local government agencies and certain nonprofits. Debris removal is going to be a huge expense in this recovery. Emergency protective measures, the local governments can get some reimbursement for that. And sending crews out on overtime to put up road barricades, just to do everything that needed to be done early on. And then the public assistance will also include, on a case-by-case basis, some help with rebuilding some of the government buildings, which may have been damaged. So right now, though, the priority is on the people, the individual assistance. But there's two different elements to the FEMA help.
Got it. Thank you so much. And the counties where the public assistance part is available, in addition to that first list that I'm seeing here, is Hamilton, Holmes, and Leon, Madison, and Suwannee counties as well in that. So thank you so much, Nate.
Okay, glad to talk to you.
Thanks.
Take care, Nate, and we appreciate all the info here. Nate Custer, the spokesperson for FEMA, who will have all kinds of folks on the ground in those areas that we just talked about. And before we get an update here from Tara Barkey, let's update you on something else that just came in. Of course, Governor Scott has been touring the affected areas. U.S. Senator Bill Nelson also was over at Tyndall Air Force Base today, and that had been a major point of controversy after the evacuation of the base, which included 11,000 military personnel and their families, and massive destruction of that area, of that facility. Would Tyndall reopen, or would it follow what happened to Homestead Air Force Base down in South Florida after Andrew came through in 1992? That base shut down. Senator Nelson's office says that is not an issue at Tyndall. It will rebuild. It will continue. So that's from Senator Nelson's office. And I believe President Trump is flying into Eglin tomorrow was the last that I had heard from that. Let's go to Tara Barkey, who is joining us here on line two. Hi, Tara. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really great. And I just wanted to call to say I know everybody's had a really hard time, but I was only out of power for 3 days. And Hermione, it was four.
Wow.
So, atta boy.
Yeah. And you're
atta guys.
You are right there at the corner of Old Bainbridge and Tharp. And there was a big tree there back behind the Goodwill, as I noticed, that came crashing down, and a whole bunch on the rest of Old Bainbridge Road, which is a canopy road.
Yeah, I haven't been out to see because I use a wheelchair and I don't drive, so I only know what's happening in my yard, but debris. And I have a big live oak right next to me that's not mine, that belongs, it's on the city property, that I can't afford to prune. I've pruned the pecans on the west side of my house, but I can't afford to prune the big, but, you know, it's hearing people talk about the live oaks going down and the shallow. I really kind of was expected that to happen, but I had somebody walk around my house and my fence isn't even damaged. That sounds awful when other people are having so much problem, isn't it? The only thing I really wanted to point out was I thought the utility crews did a really good job, at least in my neighborhood.
Well, thanks, and I'm sure that they appreciate your appreciation, Taryn. Thanks for the report on that. Okay, before we go to Ryan Daly, a caller asking if we have info from Leon County Schools about plans with schools that are still without power.
Leon County Schools says they will be open tomorrow. That is the latest that we've heard from Leon County Schools. I was talking with them today. Their plan is to still be open. They're working through logistics right now, but that's their plan, and I've yet to hear anything different.
Nope. Now, there are three schools that don't have power, right, in Leon?
There are three that don't have power right now in Leon. They might be powered up by this evening, perhaps. I don't know, but according to Leon County Schools, their plan is to still be open tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah. Ryan Daly, hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in here about debris. I know our last two callers, our FEMA representative and then someone in Leon, were talking about the debris totals. City of Tallahassee said last night a total of 364 tons of storm debris removed already. And I can tell you, driving through my neighborhood, that number is probably going to continue to go up, up, up. So I would look for that. But I also wanted to give a quick update on you know, resources for people with medical needs in Gulf and Franklin counties. In Gulf County, people with medical needs being directed to go to Sacred Heart Hospital or the Wewahitchka Health Department. Also, as far as prescriptions go, there are two pharmacies that will be open this week in Gulf County from Monday to Friday. That will be Buyrite stores in Port St. Joe and Wewahitchka. They will be open from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And there is a note here. The pharmacist can fill 4 to 5 day supplies of non-controlled medications only. And in order to get that, the patient will need to bring the actual prescription bottle. In Franklin County, people with medical needs are directed to go to Weems Medical Center East and West locations. They are open today until 4 p.m. and longer if needed as urgent care clinics. And there also is a CVS in Mariana that is operational. That is the location on US 90.
Okay, thank you. We also know a lot of patients had been transported to Leon County. I saw an article in your old employer there, the Democrat, saying that Capital Regional was essentially at capacity because so many people had been moved out of the panhandle over here. So not sure of the situation at Tallahassee Memorial. We'll check in on that. Gina Jordan, what have you been following?
Well, I'm trying to help Regan out here. I'm looking at the power outage map, and at this point, just to let you guys know, there are 17,000 customers left for the city of Tallahassee without power. You would be one of those, Regan.
I am. Yes, I am one of those.
Indeed.
And I'm hoping where I'm going to be in the few percent left that's supposed to be restored to make us to 90% by the end of the day.
It's steadily coming down. Yep. And then also, let's see, Gulf Power still has 66,000. Talquin has about 27,000 still. And they've been having problems with their transmission lines, and Duke Energy has been working on that. So they keep sending out notices saying, we feel you. We're working on it. We desperately want to get this up and running. So it's being worked on.
Yeah, and part of the problem with Talquin had been that their generation source is not of their own doing. They rely on other regional utilities, like Progress Energy, to supply them with the power.
Yeah.
So if they're not getting it from Progress, then they can't pass it on down the line.
Yeah, I know with Talquin, Duke Energy has really been focusing on those transmission lines at the substations. So and they're saying, too, they've had some unexpected issues come up throughout. So hang in there, guys. That's all we can tell you right now.
Something I wanted to mention, too, as we are talking about restoring power, one thing that I've noticed is in our hardest hit areas, a lot of the customers there use Gulf Coast Electric Co-op, and that electric company seems to be without any communication right now. So a lot of our numbers about outages in those areas are old. They're from Wednesday. That's the latest we've been able to get information from them. I've been calling them today, hoping to hear more from them, but the number doesn't even ring. It just goes dead.
Yeah, and that has been a problem, too. We had gotten it in advisory earlier that since there are so many Verizon customers, some of their towers or cell sites had gone down. They have emergency power, generator power, but you run out of gas. It goes to batteries. The batteries die. The cell tower is down, and your phone is looking for something to connect to, and it may be really, really marginal or not work at all. And so Verizon has been bringing in some kind of portable cell sites to help with that. Lynn?
Speaking of Verizon, you know, Verizon has now been issuing updates every couple of hours. And from their update this morning, they were saying that efforts to get towers back up is ongoing. They say that much of the fiber needed to connect to the cell sites is being repaired, and several more sites are slowly coming back into service. In the meantime, they've deployed 10 additional portable cell sites called Cells on Wheels. They've activated a total of 23 of those portable sites. So, you know, that is just kind of an idea of the communication issues here on the ground. Communication is important because without communications, we slow our ability to get stuff in and out. And I know a lot of people kind of continuing on our conversation regarding utilities. We had Gulf Power on the show yesterday, and their representative was saying how, you know, they were bringing in about 2,000 power poles because there's not a pole standing in a couple of counties. So they're actually having to sort of rebuild it. And I had a couple of questions about, well, you know, if they have to rebuild it, why not just bury the line? And so we actually had a little conversation on Twitter about that. And you can't bury the line in certain areas. The water table is too high. The ground is too shallow. You have issues with saltwater intrusion that is now starting to crop up. So you bury a line and, well, you fry a pole as soon as water hits it. Then there's also some logistical issues in certain places with burying the lines that they were talking about, which is while buried lines are better able to withstand powerful storms, they're harder to repair when they go out. But, you know, that doesn't mean that communities won't bury the lines. Here in Tallahassee, Tallahassee has buried many of theirs. I live in a neighborhood that does have buried lines, and I probably should not say this on air because I'm going to get tomatoes, but my neighborhood lost power for exactly 1 hour. And we've had power throughout. But burying the lines is definitely a part of the conversation and will continue to be a part of the conversation as we basically rebuild entire grids now after this particular storm situation.
And we will have three new members of the Tallahassee City Commission to provide their input into that conversation after November 6th. Let's see if we can get Sarah in. We may have to split her call during the break, but Sarah is one of our WFSU public media cohorts and colleagues over on the TV side. Hey, Sarah, how are you and Corky doing?
Hey, Tom, we're doing okay. We still don't have any power, and we're just off of Meridian Road before you get to North Florida Christian. So we're actually fairly close in and still don't have power. But I think we actually had a tornado go through here right after the storm went through. And we have a lot of downed trees with wires twisted up in them. And we have big trucks in the neighborhood, though, and they're working on untangling everything and putting up new wire. So I'm really hopeful we have something by tonight.
Well, we're hoping you do, too. I think you had a question real quick here. We're heading to break, Sarah, but about Sale High School?
Yes. Schools that have been acting as shelters for evacuees from the coast, are they going to still be having people in them?
Yeah, so again, the schools are slated to reopen tomorrow, and they're in the process of sort of routing people to other types of shelters right now. But the plan, Sarah, is to still have schools open by Monday for Leon County.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Sarah. All the best to you guys, and we'll see you back at work when you get back.
I'll be there tomorrow.
All righty, see you then.
Okay,
we're going to take a quick time out here on Perspectives and then back with our special post-storm recovery edition. 850-414-1234. Would love to hear from you. An update from Gulf Power straight ahead when Perspectives continues. Continuing our special edition of Perspectives in the wake of Hurricane Michael, the recovery, the getting back to normal, and so much of this conversation has been involved with power restoration. And Lord knows the folks over in the area served by Gulf Power are certainly having a time of it, and Kimberly is back from Gulf Power. She joined us yesterday on Perspectives, and Kimberly, everyone's waving at you here. So good to have you back. What's the latest with you guys?
Well, we're really excited that today we are able to announce that basically by midnight, October 24th, 14 days after the landfall of Hurricane Michael, 95% of all Gulf Power customers, and those are customers who can accept electrical service, should be restored. That's over the last 24 hours, we've already restored 21,000 Gulf Power customers, but this 95% will be a huge game changer for the folks over there in those hard-hit areas of Panama City and the Panama City surrounding areas.
Boy, you bring up a good point, though, Kimberly, and that is for folks who are able to accept power. Now, from let's just say from a Gulf Power pole into a household, whose responsibility is that? Is that the homeowner or is that the utility to provide that hookup?
Okay. I'll have to double check on that. I'm pretty sure it's like, you know, from the pole to the house it is. It's everything behind the meter is the customer's responsibility. So one of the things that could be, might prevent them from getting their power is a problem with the meter. If it's our size of meter, if their power doesn't come on and everybody else's power in the neighborhood is on, they can call us. And, well, first of all, they should check their meter. And then secondly, if they still don't have their power, if it doesn't look like there's something wrong with the meter, then they should call us. The other thing is that there could be, if their house floods, they might not be able to, their electrical system could be damaged. And then there's another small portion of customers, well, I don't know how small it's going to be in this storm, but there's another portion of customers who may not be able to get their power on because their house fits in this thing called a 50% rule. I don't know if you've heard about that, but it's under FEMA, and it has to do with the flood insurance program. So if they're in a certain area and their house has the damage to the house to restore it or rebuild it or repair it, if the cost of that exceeds 50% of the market value, they could fall under this 50% rule. And that would mean that they would have to bring their house up to current codes in order to have that house, in order to rebuild their house and get it going. So those people are going to fall into that category, too, that they may not be able to get their power restored. But that's something that they need to check with their local county building departments. If their houses are damaged to that extent, to find out whether or not they fall into that category.
Kimberly, one thing that we've been talking mm-hmm. a little bit about here and that we've been hearing from people is they're saying, hey, maybe we wouldn't have all lost power if we had underground power lines. And so I think some people are saying, hey, maybe when Gulf or other companies are fixing these power lines, maybe they should be taking those underground. Is that a consideration? And is that a good idea?
Well, there's a lot of new neighborhoods that are going that route, and the thing is that it's great for a lot of things, but it's also very susceptible to flooding. And if there is flooding, because the infrastructure is underground, it can be harder to identify where the problem is and harder to get to it and to get up underneath the concrete or the ground and repair that. It does cost a lot more money, and so some communities that have decided, to put out, pay the extra to have it underground are doing that. But it's not a silver bullet to solving power outages.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're saying it depends on what neighborhood a person lives in. If they live pretty far inland, maybe that is a good choice for them. But if you're a coastal neighborhood, it mm-hmm. might not work out well with
right.
storm surge and other flooding
mm-hmm.
issues.
Exactly. And if they're willing to pay, the extra that it costs to put that in. But, for us, we're just really happy. I mean, we have had, this was an unprecedented hurricane, and we felt like this is going to be an unprecedented restoration. And we're able to do this because we've had just a huge amount of resources, 5,000 resources to go in and help us with this restoration, and everybody's working kind of in a simultaneous manner. I mean, we have like a traditional, here's the steps to restoring power, but in this case, I mean, we're following those steps, but we're also doing a lot of things all at the same time. And as more and more people get on and we get more people restored, we're going to still take those same assets, those same people, the same workers, and just concentrate them in those harder hit areas and the hit areas. So this is what's going to help us really speed up this restoration. And
right.
Some of the other good news is that downtown Panama City, Callaway, Parker, Lynn Haven, Youngstown, and surrounding areas are those are the ones that we're estimating that will be restored by midnight on October 24th. And then we have some other counties that we're estimating will be coming back online by October 17th, even earlier. And I don't know if you would like a list of those, but I can give them to you.
Sure.
Right ahead.
Okay. All right. Areas north of I-10 and Bonifay and Chipley and all of Carrieville and Campbellton are estimated to be restored by midnight October 17th. Vernon, Sunny Hills, and the surrounding areas south of I-10 are estimated to be restored by midnight October 18th. And customers who live in the Cypress and Appalachia areas with the mailing address of Sneed, Florida, which are served by Gulf Power, are estimated to be restored by midnight October 19th. And then we have some other ones, too, like Panama City Beach west of Highway 79. Well, that is estimated to be restored by midnight tonight. A lot of that area is already restored, but there are, I think, are a few little outages there. And then Panama City east of Highway 79 to the Hathaway Bridge is estimated to be restored by midnight Monday, October 15th.
Moving in the right direction, that's for sure, Kimberly.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll tell you, you know, as I said, our president CEO, Stan Conley, said that, you know, that Hurricane Michael, you know, it was an unprecedented storm. And Gulf Power and all of the teammates here have made it our mission to ensure that we give this unprecedented response. Because, you know, we see the impact that it's having on this community, and we want. And that is our main mission, is to get the power back on as quickly and as safely as possible.
We really appreciate the update, and all the best to all the crews working so hard to meet those objectives, Kimberly, and thanks from all of us to all of you over at Gulf Power. We also are talking about food as well as power restoration, and first thing this morning, some members of the Florida State University football and basketball teams were over at Second Harvest of the Big Bend loading trucks that were then ferrying those supplies out into the panhandle. Let's get an update from the executive director of Second Harvest of the Big Bend, Rick Miner. Hey, Rick.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Oh, yeah, wonderful. Boy, you were up early this morning, weren't you?
We were, as well as a lot of other people that had pickup trucks for hire. So, yeah, it was a busy morning.
So talk about the logistics there. Exactly what did you guys move over, and how many vehicles did that take this morning?
Well, it was actually, I have to give credit where it's due. Representative Lorraine Osley came up with the idea yesterday about, because we're having trouble reaching out to the normal distribution channels that we have for our food at Second Harvest, because everyone's out of power, everyone's out of cell service. So Lorraine proposed, well, you know, why don't you actually take a truck to some of these churches in the high priority areas, meet them before church service starts, and then offer it to the parishioners before they go into service. Brilliant idea. We got approval from the state EOC and the Big Bend Emergency Management Team around 4:30 yesterday afternoon. That's when we sent out the media release and put it on social media. Listen, anyone that has a pickup truck, come here this morning at 7:30 a.m., take a load of food and water to a church address that we're going to give you. By 7:30 this morning, we had, I'm not joking, we probably had 100 different trucks from around Leon County lined up from Second Harvest, the entrance, all the way down to Capitol Circle. Which was amazing. So much support in this community. We had to turn many of those trucks away because we simply didn't have the food in the church locations identified. But in the end, we had 54 pickup trucks that delivered a total of 40,000 bottles of water and 170,000 meals to about 27 churches in some of the high-priority counties that we have.
That is incredible. It reminds me of the old song from the 70s, something about a convoy. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
Now,
in the wake of that, though, Rick, as you try to make this a more, you don't want to say permanent, but a longer lasting situation, and we talked about this yesterday when you joined us, and thank you again for that. What about distribution locations now going forward? What do we do from this end on?
Yes, and I think I mentioned this to you yesterday. Every single day, we are calling our 135 partners, those schools and churches and nonprofits that we deliver food to on a regular basis. And then they take that food and they deliver that to clients will basically either come to their food pantry or be served a meal. That's what we do on a normal, under blue skies, when things are normal. Of those 135, about 75% of those are not reachable. No power, no cell service in some of these counties. And so we're unable to talk to them and schedule a drop-off for food or water. So what we're doing every single day is we're going through that entire phone list and having volunteers and staff run through those numbers every single day. And every single day we're adding a little bit more and more of those agency partners that are able to be connected with. So we're working on getting back to a normal situation. We have regularly scheduled deliveries to these agency partners because the people that are around those neighborhoods are food insecure even without a hurricane. And so we're trying to ramp up those normal operations starting today, actually, while at the same time we are doing everything we need to do to help those recovering above the normal situation with regarding to Hurricane Michael.
Well, anything else that you need, Rick, please, again, give us a call. Let us know what's going on, and we'll get the word out for you. Anybody have anything else for Rick while he's on the line? We're good to go, Mr. Miner. Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you all for everything you're doing.
Okay, take care. Speaking of convoys, a caller, now we have not confirmed this. This is just an anecdotal report, but a caller reported seeing 60-plus Palm Beach County's sheriff vehicles traveling west on I-10, apparently bringing supplies within the past hour or so. So that's good, Lynn.
Yeah, and there was a large deployment of police and sheriff deputies that left yesterday. As well, I saw them as I was sort of driving home on a break. There were about 60 of those. So definitely you've got law enforcement heading to some of those communities. Tom, I want to bring people's attention to there are now about 33 state-backed food and water and supply distribution sites across the panhandle. The full list can be found if you have internet at floridadisaster.org. But I do want to highlight a couple of places for our friends in some of these outlying areas that probably don't have phone right now or internet. For those who are in or around Alpha Town Hall and Mossy Pond, 225586 Main Street in Alpha, 22216 Northwest Lake McKenzie Boulevard in Alpha. You can find food and water and other supplies there. For our friends in Blountstown, Magnolia Square and Sam Atkins Park. For our friends in Bonifay, the Holmes County Agriculture Center. Bristol, Liberty County at 10979 Spring Street, Bristol, Florida. Let's see, Chipley. We've gotten a lot of calls from Chipley. You can find that site at Chipley High School. Chattahoochee. I know Chattahoochee was especially hard hit. You can find these supplies at 100 Main Street in Chattahoochee. Other key sites here, we've got Bozeman High School, Rosenwald High School, Moore Elementary School, Parker Elementary School, and Lowe's. Those are all locations in Panama City. In the city of Quincy, you can find it at 192 14th Street. In Sneeds in Jackson County, you can find it at 2027 3rd Avenue in Sneeds. That's just a few. The full site, the full list for those of you guys who can get to it is at floridadisaster.org. And there are 33 of these sites now up and running across everywhere from basically Wakulla all the way out into Washington County.
Great update, Lynn. Thank you. In the few moments we have remaining, let's see if we can get in another call here of the denizen of Witching Stick Studios out off of Apalachee Parkway east of Tallahassee. Is our good pal, Mr. Howell. Are you still hanging on, Hal?
I'm here, buddy.
Hey, have you had to revert to totally acoustic music, or are you capable of doing electric right now?
No, man. It's been, we were very lucky here on the east side. I wanted to say that.
So you've got power back up there along Apalachee Parkway heading out towards the Apalachee Park then, huh?
We have, I think, as far as I know, everyone out here does. I know they still don't somewhere out Thomasville. I was out there today. Looks like Premier Jim doesn't have any power and stuff like that. But we were very lucky. And I mainly wanted to just, you guys have been great, you know, kind of like a lifeline in the dark.
We appreciate that, Hal. And
and
let us know when you have a new collection of songs here. We'll talk about those too, okay?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, thanks for all you do for the community. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the feedback, Hal Shows. We appreciate that. Any updates on FSU Panama City campus? Are we still, as far as we know, an indefinite closure out there? I had heard estimates damage anywhere from $1.3 to $1.5 million on that campus, Lynn.
That's probably likely. FSU Panama City campus is indeed still closed indefinitely, as is TCC's Gadsden Center and probably a lot of other places. Bay County Schools is still closed indefinitely. So, no, those will not be reopening anytime soon, Tom. And just a reminder to our friends in outlying counties, there are still curfews in effect. Bay County still has a curfew in effect. Calhoun, Franklin, Gadsden, Gulf, Jackson, and Liberty. Curfews are in effect as they continue trying to clean up from this storm.
Okay, and before we go, a quick roundtable here. A caller wanted to clarify about Killarney Estates. The Tree Harbor subdivision still has no power out there. Ryan?
Yeah, I just wanted to, Lynn mentioned curfews. I just wanted to say there are burn bans as well for burning debris. I know right now Franklin County has a burn ban active, as well as that'll be Gulf County has a burn ban. So if you're out there hoping to get rid of some of that debris, if you're in Gulf or Franklin, you might want to not take fire to it.
No, but I noticed there's no barbecue ban because the folks across the street last night, they pulled everything. They rescued it from their freezer and they decided, hey, let's invite the neighborhood. And my gosh, it looked like a blast furnace under full sail across the street from us right there. Regan McCarthy, anything from you?
Yeah, just to piggyback on what Ryan's saying about the burn ban, I'm also getting pleas from health officials across the area to be careful when you are working on that debris cleanup. If you're not familiar with using a chainsaw, find somebody who is. Realize you might be allergic to some of these materials. Just use caution. Be safe.
Okay. And you're going to be up bright and early tomorrow morning, Gina Jordan?
It's true.
Yeah.
I will be up bringing you the latest.
Guys, terrific, terrific job on behalf of all the folks connected with WFSU Public Media. This has really been a labor of love and very, very labor intensive, too. So once we get this out of the way, let's have a party. What do you say?
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you all for tuning into these special editions of WFSU's Perspectives. Political Perspectives returns tomorrow. We have confirmation it will be Dustin Daniels versus John Daly right here in this very studio, both vying for the mayor's office here in Tallahassee. Technical assistants, Taylor Cox, thank you, sir. David Mullins, our general manager, and the WFSU news team, Ryan Daly, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Lynn Hatter. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you all. And if you are still in recovery mode, good luck. We will be checking in with you going forward, and have a good rest of your weekend. And if you're in Tallahassee, we'll see you down at the longest table here in about a couple hours. Take care.